This is a Hot Pie original.
You know, for May 8th, when you guys play, if I get Alex Jones in the studio and we start messing around, the guy's obviously musical. He's got a great, you know, voice.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man! The toads are turning gay. The Clintons are trying to murder my children.
We'll figure it out. But if you need an opening act, I think QAnon Core would really enrage a lot of your audience. All right. So my name is Lee, and I am La Musique Dilettante. I am a person who cultivates interest in the arts without a real commitment to them. And I'm trying my best. But while everybody has progressed in life, gone to college, gone into careers and risen in the corporate world, I've stayed behind on Tumblr, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, unveiling gems, hidden genres that I want to bring to you, the people. So while you continue on with your life and through pandemic, I remain alone in my room, devoid of sunlight, going through these wormholes of music and places you really don't want your children going on the internet. But it's all worked out because now I have a podcast and it's official because I've got Topaz from Golden Dawn Orchestra on my podcast today, which makes it official. Like, this is actually happening. This is not just a joke.
Oh, yeah.
That was a little Barry White to get you going.
I like these microphones.
I like hot chocolate on Sunday, baby. Warms me up.
These mics are the best.
Yeah. It's hot R20s. Pie, baby. I forget what it is. Serving up slices of culture every day.
What are these? RE20s?
Right.
RTDT2s. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about Afrobeats and Afrobeat. And there's a huge difference in the S in Afrobeats and Afrobeat. Just to give you a little context of what that might be, Afrobeats was pioneered in the 2000s and 2010s, and it's really a more all-encompassing umbrella of music that includes everything from hip life, hip hop, dancehall, soca, juju, Dombolo, R&B, Niger beats, which is beats out of Nigeria, Azanto, palm wine music. So it really kind of umbrellas a lot of different cultures, and a lot of people have problems with that. A lot of people come out and say Afro beats is just something that a white person invented, a lot like the world music category at the Grammys.
Right.
You know, just to oversimplify everything. But Afro beat is a lot more distinctive, and it emanates from Fela, who you're definitely a lot more familiar with than I am.
Yeah.
When did you first get into Fela? Or where did you discover him?
I distinctly remember the first time I ever heard Fela. I was in high school. I hung out during high school. I was playing with some older guys, college dudes. And I remember ripping, you know, a couple of bong hits, and they put on this music, and I was just like, I don't know. I can still to this day distinctly remember just being like, oh my God, because I played saxophone already, and there's so much horn, amazing horn lines on his stuff. And I was already into James Brown and these other, you know, the JBs and funk music and jazz music, that at that point I was really starting to get into more funk, and Fela is so influenced by funk, but it's got this other element of Afro music that's just like, I don't know, but anyways, the horn lines are just so epic, and I was just like, oh my God, I want to play baritone sax in this band, and that's all I ever want to do in my entire life.
Nice.
But Beasts of a Nation was the album. I can't remember the song though.
And Fela is known for having like a more orchestral setup.
Yeah,
he's got 13 to 14 people up there, so when he toured the States, he brought, it was almost like a caravan. It was, it was like, you know, a real happening at every city that he showed up.
Yeah, my friend actually, who played me that CD and got me high, was, his band opened for them actually in DC. He had a quote unquote world beat band. And back then in the 90s, though, world beat was like a thing for sure. But he opened for them. Yeah, he said it was incredible, except for the fact that they started like 3 or 4 hours late, and Fela was probably high shit on crack, and he did a lot of talking, not as much playing. As he apparently did a lot of talking. This was towards the end when he was sick, and
that's a key distinction. So Fela was always political.
Yeah.
And he made that a, you know, that was integral part.
Yeah, integral. Like, I don't even think he ever had, I don't think any of his songs are anything but political.
Right. Whereas you look at Afro Beats, and a lot of these guys are just into having great times.
Yeah.
They'd like to see twerking by the pool at a Four Seasons in Accra or Lagos.
Yeah.
And it's less about politics, except for one exception who we're going to talk to about
Burna Boy
a little later. Burna Boy gets a little political, but there's a guy named...
The last album was, I think he got a little more political.
Yeah. There's a guy named Bobby Wine, and we'll get into him in a sec, but he's out of Uganda. He just ran for president.
Oh, yeah.
So you know about him.
Well, I heard about it on the news.
Nice.
But I haven't dug in, so I'm excited to hear about
your knowledge. He's an evangelical character that, you know, is like a John Lennon hybrid, you know, trying to change the socio-political game. Think about like musicians who are just out to get streams and, you know, to get their viewership up and listening up. And then you think about people who are actually trying to change the politics in their country and pull people out of poverty.
Yeah.
It really puts things in perspective as to, you know, what we're doing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But to get back to what's going on, you know, with you right now, Golden Dawn Orchestra has, like many bands during the pandemic, been sidelined by pandemic. But I know there's been a lot of live streams happening that I've tuned in with you. And what else is, as we come out of this pandemic and crawl out of the sewers and start to get vaccinated, what's the next move with Golden Dawn?
So I've been, well, like you said, yeah, obviously Golden Dawn, for those that don't know, Golden Dawn Orchestra is a large, as it kind of implies in the name, larger ensemble. So live streaming with the band was a little bit out of the question because we're so big, and it's not like the kind of music where I could just sit down and like sing it with the guitar, you know what I mean?
Right. I meant your personal live streams, which I loved.
I was gonna get to that. So as a result, I got into doing more, which I had been before the pandemic, doing more DJing, but that seemed like the appropriate outlet was to DJ, and we were able to bring in some dancers who are in our pod, and my wife's in the band, so she was involved with that. In the beginning, it was just me and her, and then we brought in our dancers, and yeah, there was a great outlet for quite a while, and it was really cool. A lot of people were tuning in, and definitely as the world opened, we've stopped doing it, and I've started getting some DJ gigs else in the real world. But in the beginning, that really got us through, and it was such a great outlet also for the dancers to be able to dance, because, you know, for me, it wasn't as much of a performing outlet, but for them it was, because they still get to dance and stuff. But I've been demoing, just writing and demoing a ton of stuff at my home studio. And so coming out of it, I've been working with Walker Lukens, a local musician. He's been helping me produce the tracks, finish the demos, get them to re-record them, whatever it takes to get them to a more finished place. And we have a single coming out beginning of May, and we're going to have a party to celebrate that at our first real show back in Austin to celebrate that at Moody Theater, ACL Moody Theater, May 8th. And so very excited about that, and just continuing to work on. My plan is to kind of actually, like I was mentioning as well, I can't remember his name, but Joseph. I was mentioning to Joseph, or both of them,
that Joe Colt,
that we're going to try and do a lot of videos, just releasing singles and videos, moving up in basically in preparation for 2022, when we can really get back to super going back to normal in terms of festivals and stuff like that.
Got you. So you have a body of work ready to ready to move on.
Ready to move on. Well, it's not finished, but it's
slash produced by Walker Lukens.
Yes,
which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's been really great working with him. I was looking for the right fit, and he's definitely. It's definitely been rad.
Is he going to be playing?
He'll play. I mean, like, yeah. You know, yeah, a little bit here and there, but not so much. But I think that's something that he's moved into more during the pandemic is producing.
Really?
He's done some other bands, but
I can see that. I grew up with Walker Lukens in Houston. He was a couple of years older than me at a Memorial High School, but we went to a talent show at the high school and he played. And it was one of those times where I was like, I got to learn fucking piano, dude. Like nice. He just melted my brain. He was in this band called Carousel Shy. And he probably doesn't want me to talk about that too much.
Well, let's talk about it then for sure.
I love it. I still go back and listen to some of these songs that he wrote.
Carousel Shy.
It's called Carousel Shy.
That's going to be my new, nickname for him, Shy Boy. Hey, Shy Boy.
I was going to ask him to come on and do a butt rock because we both grew up in Houston. So there's a lot of, you know, like Creed and Hinder.
Oh, yeah.
And like 94.5 The Buzz was a radio station that only plays butt rock and still only plays butt rock. And if you were in a coma from 1998 and just woke up and turned on The Buzz, you'd still think it was 1998, which nice. Is crazy. But for people who haven't seen Golden Dawn Orchestra, it really is in its pageantry and it's in music, an immersive experience. And I would say it's the leading candidate for band/band leader that would be closest to turning into a cult and a drop of a dime. Like if you had a Manchurian candidate word, you would be able to get your followers to move out to Marfa to create a commune and we would hang on every word. And I would be one of those people. I would be out worshiping in the audience. And that's how I would kind of classify you guys because it's everybody's dancing, everybody's dressed up, but it's more than that. People are so invested in your shows and are waiting for your shows. So it sounds like May 8th is just going to be like a release because nobody's been out.
Yeah, I think I've already had a lot of friends tell me, oh my God, man, you're going to be our virgin show after a year of no shows. So that's I think the energy is going to be electric.
Get the EMTs out there. Yeah, I think. with going back to when Golden Dawn, your original EP in 2014, we're talking about Afrobeats. Afropocalypse is one of your first songs on that EP.
Yeah.
So when starting Golden Dawn, was Afrobeat and Fela something that was, you know, originally?
Yeah, I would say in the beginning, especially much more so than now, as it's progressed. And it kind of progresses each album to a different, I think one of the beauties of is that we transcend time and space and, you know, we're warriors of light that come from a different planet. And so it enables us to do anything we want and to play any genre we want. So definitely in the beginning, that first album and second album were definitely more heavily Afrobeat influenced and then kind of moved into some more psych realms and, disco realms and mixing it up, you know, surf, everything, micro genres. That's probably why you like us. But, this next one's going to be definitely more electro disco vibes.
Oh my God. I'm so ready for it.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Allo Allo Boom.
Yeah.
And that step towards kind of a disco vibe.
Yeah.
And I think that's the quintessence of what people need right now is just to be able to dance and kind of
release.
Not think.
Yeah.
Get in that flow state.
Yeah.
I'd say like most of your music creates flow states.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
We want to bring people, you know, like you mentioned about the shows, we really, our goal is to, for the shows along with this part of the spectacle and the visuals and the dramatic part of it is to just bring people into their bodies and present and out of their phones, you know, out of their like constant, everybody's addicted to their little screens these
days. More so during pandemic.
Yeah.
It's just like,
it's ridiculous.
I check my screen time. It's like 15 hours. Was I even awake that long? Yeah. Like, I think it was
I wondered, maybe you would know the answer to this since we're on a podcast. I should ask this.
Yeah.
I've wondered because when I have insomnia, often I'll put on podcasts. So does that count as screen time?
I think it does. If it's on YouTube and it's playing.
No. It's on the app. Like the,
it's on Spotify.
Yeah. No, well, I usually use the podcast app, Apple.
Oh, okay.
Apple has a podcast app. I've often wondered if that counts as screen time.
Well, I know they're definitely listening to you while you sleep.
That's for sure.
And while you're not sleeping. So we know that for sure. Elon, Bezos, they're all peering into our lives.
Well, we have microchips now, right?
Yes. Bill Gates provided us with
that. Pretty awesome.
Through these companies that are giving us vaccines.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pfizer gave me a microchip. I can text with you now. I was texting with Lee earlier using merely my microchip. I did not need my phone.
Signal popped up when you're in the elevator. It's like, he's here.
Yeah, it's rad, right?
Cool. Yeah, I got Pfizer'd pretty hard and happy for that because you wouldn't be here if we weren't both fully vaxxed.
Big proponent of the vax.
Definitely get the jab.
I did get controversial. I did get pretty sick off the first one.
Okay.
Which was...
A lot of people were scared about the second one.
Yeah, and I was really scared about the second one because I was so bad on the first, but I was worse on the first.
I was perfect on both, but I faked the second one so I could just have a Monday off. And it's just like, y'all, that jab. But the real one is I had this arm hang for about a week after the jab. And people are like, are you all right? You got a little bit of a limp. It's like, oh, that's my vaccine. It's kind of trending right now.
Yeah, I wore the Band-Aid for at least 3 weeks straight. I put it outside my shirt.
That's my Fred Flintstone right there. But to get
that shit tattooed on our arms with Band-Aid.
I'm getting my vaccine, card laminated. And much like in Wayne's World, I'm just going everywhere. No, excuse me.
I'm there.
I think it should be very fast. But I think Gucci and all the designer brands should come out with here's how to display your card.
That'd be rad.
Here's your international vaccine passport to get anywhere you need. But for those who don't know Afrobeat, because Afrobeat, a lot of people do know Fela and they at least know the name and a lot like Marley, he has a diaspora, he has a lot of kids, and the Cooties are still playing around the world, and they're still heralded. A lot of them are very talented. But Afrobeat was started by a UK DJ in 2012. His name was DJ Abronte, and he says that I cannot say I invented Afrobeats. Afrobeats was invented when I was born by Fela. But this is a genre of artists that I can classify like WizKid, Ice Prince, P Squared, Castro, May 7, Burna Boy, who we'll talk about a little later, Bobby Wine, and Naira Marley. But the first real artist to kind of break the charts in the UK as an Afrobeats artist was named Fuse ODG. His real name was Nana Richard Abiona, and he was from Ghana, and he began making hip hop with an African vibe, and he was not really satisfied with that vibe. So he came back from the UK to Ghana and started playing Azonto, which is a music indigenous to Ghana. And with that, he became one of the first Ghanaian artists to tour the world. And he peaked on the UK singles charts. He went viral on YouTube. So while he's not the most popular by any means, this is the guy who kind of, launched a thousand ships, paved the way for everybody else. And he's made fun of by a lot of these Afrobeats artists. They kind of, turn him down. Like, I don't know, like a DJ Jazzy Jeff, like an original, like nobody.
Yeah. It's definitely like hip hop vibes were like they're very competitive, right?
Yeah. Kill your masters, influences. But he was always a proponent of Tina, which is This Is New Africa. And he wanted it, to say that, we're elevating young Africans into a new space. And so he's got to get, props for that. But within the Afrobeats genre, you have a lot of hyper-specific, even more micro genres. One of those is Azonto, which is a Ghanaian dance and music genre. Another is Banku music, which is best known. Mr. Easy is an artist who's been playing a lot of that in Banku. is a Ghanaian dish where a lot of stuff is thrown in.
Nice.
Pon pon is Nigerian Afro pop. That's a little more mellow with soft hitting synths. A guy named Davido has been pioneering that music. And then you've got Afro Soca, which is Trinidad and Trinidadian and Nigerian Afro swing, Afro trap. It goes on and on. But of those, you know, Afro beat, you know, well, within Afro beats, what is your favorite subgenre? You've talked about Afro pop and Afro swing. Do any of those get your engines going?
Sorry, in terms of the Afro beats with an S?
Yes.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I've definitely been digging into Burna Boy and DJing him. What genre is he? What subgenre is he considered? Do you know?
So Burna Boy hates Afro beats.
Okay.
He hates that nomenclature. So he says Afro fusion. And Afro pop is what he sticks by. But everybody else classifies him in the Afrobeats umbrella. This is a hotly contested debate that has spilled out into the streets.
Nice.
And I mean, people are really angry over it.
Wow.
A lot of the older generation sees it as a slight to them, as like, you know, you're bastardizing Afrobeat and feel as like a god.
Right, right.
A deity totally. Status.
Totally.
So... we're splitting hairs there, but Burna Boy, Burna Boy is definitely the most successful,
right?
Yeah. I would say
he's an international star at this point.
What's your favorite tracks by Burna Boy?
What's that one? Oh man, there's one that I when I play it, I literally have to play it twice every time I play it. Let me look it up real quick. While I look it up, you can.
Yeah, so Burna Boy was just actually nominated in the World Music Album category for his album Twice as Tall. But here's a guy who's collaborated with Beyonce. He's collaborated with Ed Sheeran. He's definitely taken Afrobeat, you know, to the next level and is collaborating with world-renowned artists. And, you know, he's a Nigerian... born artist that spent some time in the UK, and that's very characteristic of Afrobeats. Usually the artists are from Nigeria and Ghana, and they usually sing in English, you know, with a UK accent or pidgin English.
Yeah.
Sometimes bringing in their own language. But did you get that
song? Yeah, it's the track Wonderful. It's on I'm trying to see what album it's on. Oh my God. It's such a, just like every time I hear it, it's so uplifting. like that's what I literally like when I DJ it, I'll just like play it. I'll rewind, play it twice. View album. It's on. I don't know. It's not saying what album it's on. Wonderful. The track is a track though. So that's my go-to. Like I've had a couple of go-to pandemic songs that I'll just are so uplifting. I've also gotten really into reggae. It's Monday today, right?
Oh yeah.
Are we not supposed to say what day it is?
you know, I think the days blend together. Okay. Time is subjective.
Time is subjective. Yeah. So, anyway, Sunday's been my pandemic day to ride around listening to reggae and eat a little weed and ride on my bike with my little Bluetooth speaker and just jam some like dub reggae and man, that's been super helpful.
It sounds like pure Zen.
Yeah. I tell everybody that they're having issues during the pandemic, just to jam some dub reggae, some King Tubby, the King Tubby, station on Spotify is on point.
Nice. Do you know any reggae artists like that are popping out right now that have caught your attention, or are you just going back to the classics?
I've been going back to the classics. I mean, really what we're talking like really the some of those Afro beats, like they're really touching on some like reggae vibes for sure.
A lot of crossover from Jamaica to West Africa and a lot of dance hall and Jamaica,
you know, like the beats, like Burna Boy's beats are really, they're not exactly what you're saying. They're really dance hall.
Yeah.
They're not Afrobeat beats.
Yeah.
They're dance hall beats.
A lot of these guys recognize that dance hall is, you know, slides right into what they're doing. Burna Boy,
you know, is definitely one of those. He's been collaborating with a lot of Jamaican artists and Caribbean artists. They do a lot of the Afrobeats artists did say that at the beginning they felt like they had to sound Caribbean because they didn't want to be labeled as African. They didn't, you know, Nigeria and Ghana weren't exactly
traditionally
hot.
Yeah, that's a good that's an interesting point.
So to be considered like from an island and have the island team going on, they thought they would get more attention and more radio play.
And maybe they were right.
Maybe they were right.
That's kind of fucked up.
Now it's flipped on their head and stuff that like, you know, Burna Boy said, it's funny. Most Americans don't even understand what I'm saying in my records, but they pick up the vibe, the vibration. He goes back and says, everything started from Africa. And so music started from Africa. It's all going to come back to its roots eventually. When you hear our music, it resonates in the soul. And, you know, here's a guy who grew up in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. His uncle actually managed Fela Kuti. And so there's a lot of, you know, lineage that brings him back to it. But this is a guy who's gone on international stadium tours. Like I mentioned before, he's collaborating with, you know, Beyonce, Sam Smith, you know, all these incredibly massive, you know, supernovas of stars. Yet, you know, he keeps a pretty humble countenance about himself. But he, instead of Afrobeat, says, you know, he's more Afrofusion. He's omnivorous. And that, you know, he wants to, I think a lot of artists don't want to be defined and just put in a box.
Right.
And, you know, he's in that vein as well.
Yeah.
But with, you know, Burna Boy and him taking over, you know, the charts right now, do you see like Afrobeat, not with the S, the original, translating through, you know, any artists of today or any contemporary artists?
I mean, no.
Besides yourself, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, not particularly. I mean, like we're just saying, like, it's not, it's so far from Afrobeat. It's any of the stuff that's on the radio. It's like, it's not, they're not, yeah. The syncopations and the rhythms are so different than Afrobeat. Like it's a dancehall vibe. It's a totally different thing. So, I mean, I feel like there was definitely a resurgence in knowledge or of knowledge and sort of like you're saying, like there was definitely within the last decade, there's definitely been a big, there's been more presence of Afrobeat music like Fela and stuff. And then we'd be remiss without mentioning who had a big resurgence, who was kind of an unknown in the Western worlds, of William Oniabar. And he has been a huge influence as well he's actually coming from a little bit more of a disco electro vibe. And he has a fascinating story. He may have died recently, but there's a really great YouTube documentary on him. People could never really figure out. He like recorded in the 70s, like with multiple massive Moog synthesizers, and he had all these tape machines and all these crazy synths and stuff. And so I think he was a prince or a king or something, but even nonetheless, even with some extra money, like people could never really figure out how the hell he got these, amazing massive pieces of electronic into the jungles of Africa.
Wow.
And like there's some different conspiracy theories, like maybe he was like a Russian spy like working with the Russians or something, and
the plot thickens.
But anyways then he gave up music completely and found Jesus Christ and stopped playing music, unfortunately. But definitely a cat to check out, and who's been a huge influence, but also interesting. Yeah. Like definitely interesting how, in Africa, it seems more of a thing. And this is a big part of what we do at Golden Dawn is, bringing a message. And that seems a lot more common in, African music, and especially like with this guy as well, with William Oniabar. He has some love songs, but it's mostly about like being your higher self and fighting for rights, your rights, and all kinds of different stuff. So,
was he political or?
Yeah. He not to the extent of Fela, but probably because he was a fucking prince, but he didn't have to. But you know, he's like, yeah, he's like got a song called I think it's Atomic Bomb. Like he's got different ones that are like, yeah, you know, singing about world peace and coming together and more like that. It's not as specific as Fela, like, you know, like fuck the electric company or whatever Fela's singing about, you know, like
it's tragic when we lose artists to religion. Like it's one thing if they continue to make music, like Al Green, you know, continued to make music, Kanye, you know, just one best religious album, but to just shut it off is
weird.
I don't understand how that, how that happens, especially somebody as like prevalent and who is just used to creating and that probably becomes part of their being. They must, you know, just transfer that into religious dogma and finding, you know, the light through our Lord.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I guess that's all they need. And I will tell, sorry, are we short on time?
No.
I will tell an interesting story, about that. The first show I did, it wasn't with Golden Dawn. It was, me and my mom are partners at Sahara Lounge.
I just want to interrupt. I love watching you accept awards at the industry awards here because I think the last one you brought mom on your phone.
Yeah, I FaceTimed her.
it was the greatest award speech ever. Anyway.
So, and also we should mention Africa Night at Sahara Lounge where she plays bass every Saturday, almost every Saturday.
Hell yeah.
With a lot of her partner is from Niger, not Nigeria, but Niger. But a lot of West African musicians in that band. Anyways, my first gig in front of people was for the preacher from next door, Charles Ely, is a friend of mine. And we've done festivals on his land and stuff too. And so he asked me to put together a small band for a little festival he was doing out in Giddings, Texas. And so I put together like a little jazz funk thing of about five of us. And we started playing, you know, there's like 20, 30 people there, people at this Baptist church out there. And I mean, I started talking to the crowd and I was like, thank you so much for having us. This is our first show. I've played in front of people in a year. Like at that point, this was in, it had been almost a year. I can't remember. It was like a month or two ago. It had been almost a year. And I was like, I literally broke down crying. Like I was like, I just started crying and I was like, I just got so emotional because realizing, you know, and I just said to the crowd, I was like, this is our religion. Playing music is our religion, you know? And so to not have it has been, and they were all just so loving and kind and peace and great about it, you know, but they got it. They were like, yeah, we still go to church, but y'all can't even play music. Although they have a lot of music in their church, which is cool too.
Right. Giddings, Texas, man, for a quintet playing Afro. That's not what I imagined.
Oh, it was,
Giddings is a speed trap.
Oh, it was different. It was different, bro.
Oh, I bet. Did you get a few new fans though?
Yeah.
Couple people who are taking their tithing and instead investing in Golden Dawn
Orchestra.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd love to see
They're moving to Marfa with us.
I'm in. I'm telling you, what is the word in which your whole following just clicks in and we move to Marfa?
What is the code word or
what's the switch?
The switch?
What's the audio switch?
You're going to have to pay attention. Just pay attention to the next album. It'll be embedded in there somewhere.
Oh my God. I'm excited. May 8th. Hopefully we all just end up in a zombie-like set. Yes. All I want is just serotonin, dopamine constantly flooding my body. And I just want to matter. And I think the only way I will matter is if I'm in a cult. And I wouldn't want it to be a cult leader who is, you know, Manson-esque vibes and violent tendencies. I would want somebody who's...
Oh, it's all love and peace, baby.
Oh, that's what I want. But we talked about on Yebor, you know, may have, may not been KGB or CIA or royalty. Now in Afrobeats, we're going to talk about Naira Marley a little bit. But the way he made his money and got into music, I absolutely love. So this is a guy who moved, he moved over from Nigeria when he was 11 years old and moved to a neighborhood in London called Peckham. And Peckham is well known in London as one of the worst neighborhoods. There's a gang there called the No Manners Boys, and he was part of that. And he, through being a Yahoo boy, through a lot of, you know, just phishing online and duping people, as well as other rackets, came out and said that he had made $250,000, $250,000, and he decided to take that, invest that into his own music.
Wow.
And nobody has really figured out how he got that money, but it did get him a couple singles that were well received. And now since then, he's become, you know, one of the largest Afrobeats artists. He left London and moved back to Nigeria, and now he spends time between both. But what's unique about him is, first of all, Nigeria is going after him. The government's going after him for propagating being a Yahoo boy and bragging about it. He's also got other songs that go like Popo behind my back, behind. He's very like anti-authoritarian. So the government has actually stepped in and tried to sanction him. They've tried to jail him. Looking up his rap sheet in London, he's been arrested over 127 times for petty offenses.
Whoa.
Over there. So this is your quintessential bad boy in Afrobeats, yet he keeps chugging along and he continues to be extremely successful. Have you ever heard of him before?
I've heard of him, but I don't think I've heard the music. Yeah. Or if I have, I can't remember.
So Naira is the Nigerian currency, and Marley, he just took because it's cool. Iconic. But he now has a cult-like following of people called Marleyans, and it's gone more than just, you know, like Taylor Swift fans. They've actually developed their own, it's not a religion yet, but people call it a cult, and they have their own rites. They don't believe in Valentine's Day. They don't wear belts. He says he doesn't have skinny people singing. He only has fat people singing. So no belts, something around that.
Huh.
A lot of people might know him, you know, of my generation through. He's been included on a lot of FIFA soundtracks. He's got a song called Issa Goal. But, you know, a lot of people have gotten behind him because he has very blunt lyrics, and he just sings the truth about being a Yahoo boy and stealing money and being arrested.
Yeah.
And he continues to, you know, dominate both the UK and the West African sphere, while many accuse him of leading a cult and, you know, a religion, which I think is the end goal of like most of what we do in life.
Right. We just want to have control.
Exactly. But in a nice way, just like I want to bring a flow state to everybody and have it all.
But don't wear a goddamn belt, whatever you do.
Yeah. And no Valentine's Day. Fuck Valentine. So I think he's one of the, you know, he's definitely the bad boy of Afrobeats.
I'm going to definitely check that out. I'm excited to check some of this stuff out.
Yeah. If you really want to get into the guy who's creating the most social change, I mentioned him before, Bobby Wine.
Yeah.
You know, his real name is, I'm going to butcher this, but Robert Yagalunya. And he recently ran for president of Uganda against President Yoweri Museveni, who began as a revolutionary, but instead has led a dictatorship in Uganda for the last 27 years. And what Bobby Wine has done has, you know, he started his music career in the mid 2000s, and he ran for parliament in 2017 and won. And since then, he's really fused his political rallies into concerts, traveled all over Uganda and Africa.
And he just ran for president, right?
And he just ran for president. Now, the official tally was Museveni won 58% to 34%. Yet all outside, you know, advisors are on, you know, the international community has said that's absolute bullshit. And as well as Bobby Wine's crew has said, you know, again, we've, you know, been cheated.
Yeah.
So now his party,
unfortunately, thanks to Trump, anybody can say that now.
Exactly. He leads the National Unity Platform, and he calls himself the ghetto president. And his National Unity Platform has 61 seats. So they're the main opposition in Uganda. But, you know, this is a guy who's actually trying to instigate change and get rid of dictatorship. And if you listen to his style of music, it's a lot less blingy and UK. It's definitely more like,
cool,
you know, invigorating and, yeah, and
uplifting.
Yes. But he's currently, he just got out of an 11-day siege where they were trying to imprison him. Yet, you know, half of the population, mainly the youth of Uganda, are rallying around him and causing so many problems that Museveni can't actually sanction him and do much to bring him down. There's definitely, you know, some people who are taking shots at Bobby and saying that he really doesn't stand for much. He's got a very broad platform. He doesn't get in on the specifics. Uganda has a huge LGBTQ problem where
all of Africa.
He hasn't really gotten behind that either. But, you know, for what he's doing, when you look on in the world of musicians who are actually trying to move the needle and do change their music, it doesn't get any more closer to the source than that.
Yeah.
Somebody who's actually fighting a dictatorial power.
So Fela ran for president as well. And
I did not know that.
And also, yeah, a lot of parallels. Fela ran for president and he, same thing. I mean, you know, people might say, well, was he really serious about it? I mean, I don't know if he got as many votes as, well, we don't know because it's all, could all be just
bullshit.
But he definitely ran for president, and he also was under siege as well. And the government actually ransacked his compound and like really, I don't know. I can't remember. I think they like really injured his mother in the process. And cause he lived in a, speaking of cult-like leaders, he was definitely a cult-like leader. He lived, you know, he had like 40 wives who were his dancers and lived in a compound. And so they had this compound where they were just, that's where they would perform and where they lived and everything. And yeah, at one point after, I think it was after he ran for president, they sieged his compound and finally broke in and just fucked everything up.
How did he die?
He died of AIDS, I think. It's not. Yeah, I think he died of AIDS.
You know, we think like here in America that we're immune from that the government just lets our musicians be. But you go back to John Lennon, had a dossier on him, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, you know, all those 60s agents of change.
Yeah.
All had dossiers that have now been found out. But who is the government watching now?
Shit. I mean, oh my God. What are you trying to say? You're saying there's a dossier on me?
I think Golden Dawn Orchestra is slowly arriving on the horizon of somebody to be looking out for, especially with their cult-like following in Central Texas that could easily be manipulated into a larger force.
That's right.
But who would be some artist that would definitely be on the FBI watch list? I mean, during Trump's presidency, I'm sure it's just like,
oh, right. Well, yeah.
Everybody.
It's hard to know if the FBI even listened to Trump, though.
I mean, yeah.
It's hard to know. It's, who knows? I did just see that also, the Black Panther movie. Did you see that? That was incredible. That's incredible.
I have not seen it. I've heard great things.
Yeah, because they like killed, he was like 20 years old when they killed him in his sleep. The government killed him, like, so fucked up, man. And he was like, you know, what you hear about typically is all of how they carried guns and they were possibly more of a militant group, but really they were out there trying to create trying to feed people and get medical facilities built and schools and stuff like that. And he was just like this incredible orator. Like, he was like the next progression from King and Malcolm X. Like, he was the natural progression of all that. And they just killed the motherfucker in his sleep, man. But also just a really great film.
As far as when you do take your cult out to Marfa, what religious figure would be tangential to your religion that you would preach?
Well, we've taken a fair amount, you know, the name Orchestra is a tip of the hat to Sun Ra. And, we've taken a fair amount of our religious and spiritual beliefs from him. You know, he was very Afrocentric and we're a much broader, diverse group, both races and sexes and all of the above. So we're not as Afrocentric, but we definitely have taken from him this, the worship of the sun god Ra, and taken a lot of things from the Golden Dawn was a esoteric group and that was really comes out of the Egyptian tradition. So we take a lot from the Egyptian practices, as well as it was something that the really became a group in the British beginning, I guess. Aleister Crowley had a Golden Dawn secret society. So we draw from it all, you know, but we, as I mentioned, just like our music, we kind of draw from all different sources, but in general, we really believe in, you know, we would not be a planet. We would not have a food source or anything without the sun. So even if you don't even look at it in a spiritual light, just looking at it from a scientific basis, like, we would not be alive without the sun. We would not have food. We wouldn't have anything. And the flip side of it is, if we don't fucking get our shit together here and clean up our act, that's what's going to kill us too. The sun god Ra is going to burn us because we're not taking care of our mothership. So we're strong proponents of trying to remind people that this is, for the time being, we have not figured out how to live on another planet. So we need to take care of our planet.
Get it going, Elon. Get us out of here, buddy.
Come on, buddy.
Because Sun Ra is looking to put the magnifying glass over us and just burn us like the ants we are. But when I'm out in Marfa with you and I'm in my Sufi state, just whirling around in my shawls, how do I take sacrament as part of your religion?
We generally, you know, enjoy to imbibe in, you know, some psychedelics. Fungus is a big part of our creative process.
Soon to be legal, hopefully.
Soon to be legal in some states. So, fungus has been around longer than any of us. So we're a big proponent of that. And that is, you know, occasionally we'll dip into a little mezcal here and there, but stick to the fungus as much as possible.
I love that. It's a nice pairing.
Yeah.
If aliens came down and told us that they'd been spying on us through certain bands and artists in the world right now, who would be the obvious culprits?
Well, we would.
I knew it. I saw it in the eyes. I saw a little reptilian flicker and I was like, the lizard people have arrived. The lizard king.
Yep.
AKA Jim Morrison. Yep. He may have been the lizard
king. He may have been the lizard king. He
died out on his.
Trying to think of other artists.
I mean, I think Kanye would be like the obvious one, but I don't know. Fergie kind of has like a reptilian look to me.
The lizard people.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky.
Who are the lizard people?
I mean, you look at Taylor Swift and she's just like, there's a cold glassiness to like everything. And then you're just like, Madonna has just been too good, you know, throughout the years. And
you think she's getting help from the extraterrestrials?
Absolutely. That whole Kabbalah thing that she went through, that was just her trying to throw us off the trail.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a side note, if you woke up and there was a body in your living room, didn't know how it got there, but realized that this could be incriminating and you have to bury it in your backyard immediately, what soundtrack do you play on to get that body buried as quickly as possible?
Oh man, I'd throw on that dub reggae, dude. King Tubby Radio, brah.
That is the chillest burial ever. Dude,
I love digging in the garden to some dub reggae styles.
Why bring any trauma into it? Dude, just enjoy
it.
Just
the body.
Yeah.
Shit.
He's just putting him back where he came from. Oh my God. What is your darkest secret in music? If somebody was to walk into you dancing in front of a mirror to this type of music or to this artist, who would be the most embarrassing for you?
I mean, we've already talked about him so much, but Burna Boy I don't know. I think that's pretty trashy, man. I think he's pretty trashy, really. Like, it's pretty bubblegum in a way.
Yeah, know? His music does score a lot of twerking around pools.
Yeah.
And, you know, He just wants you to be at the Ritz-Carlton popping Vuv. Yeah. So I can see that.
But I've delved into some more of the poppier side of things lately. So
one thing that I think we're all missing out on is everybody said when Trump's in office, we're going to have this huge renaissance of art and counter culture art. Really never happened. I didn't see too much awesome punk or anti-authoritarian. I'm sure there's some under the current there. So going the other direction, why did we not get like QAnon core? Why did we not get Alex Jones DJing and some, you know, like
all. Bro, I guarantee you there's some DJs out there that are deep Q, like
full Q.
Yeah, like just nice. I guarantee you, like, got to be in the EDM scene. Like, that's got to be a thing.
Yeah,
you haven't? Have you Googled it? Come on, that's your next podcast.
The Dilettante has not gone there, but for fear of being on a government watch list, mainly because Pizzagate, the 60 Minute.
You know what I Googled the other day? Actually, I was talking to when I was working with Adam and Walker. We're in the studio, and they had. I don't know how it came up. I know there was like they had a throw pillow with an O on it. I was like, yo, you just need to make this into a Q. You could have a Q throw pillow. And I was like, I guarantee you there's fucking Q throw pillows that you can buy online. And I looked it up and there's Q throw pillows.
Oh, hell yeah.
That have like little, it's like, you know, a Q in the, with the United States flag, like colors and like says whatever their tagline is. So any of you people out there that are looking for a nice QAnon throw pillow, they are available.
You got your anti-sex trafficking throw pillows, your Pizzagate ottomans.
Oh man, I hope that shit. I think my theory on that is that, like you're saying, it just snowballed because everybody's on social media so much. And my hope and my theory is that as people get back out into the real world and start having a couple of beers with their friends, and they start talking that bullshit, that their friends are just going to be like, "Dude, what the fuck are you talking about?" And then hopefully everybody just kind of goes back to normal, because when you're just on your bedroom on your freaking Facebook, and like, I can't even go on Facebook anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, I I'm not going on Facebook anymore. I'm quitting Facebook. It was like, I don't want to go back on there. I don't want to go on there. It's just all this bullshit. Yeah.
The pandemic that nobody really talked about is the conspiracy theorists that are living amongst your friends.
It's a full blown
unveiling themselves.
It's a mental pandemic.
And it got scary there for a while, and it still is scary. Yeah. But one thing that we're counting out, though, is here's a group of people that we thought were not creatives. The alt-right, you know, I thought they're very fascist and, you know, I wear my brown shirt and we do things this way. And like, I light things, you know, white.
Yeah. But you really think that the person that's like, is Q, or whoever's like, is Q, you don't think they're like some left-wing motherfucker just fucking with people?
I would love that. I would love it to just be. Yeah, some guy just, you know, on his headset in the dark, just like fucking with everybody. But I got to give it to, like, there's a lot of these people who I just thought, you know, would be very, you know, conservative, straight edge people that are suddenly like, no, like they're putting, you know, microchips in her blood, and right. There is dungeons full of kids like that. That's a creative exercise. Look at you go. Like, you believe, you know, like dragons are, you know, being ridden by Joe Biden. I don't know the full extent, but it's
like Hillary's drinking baby's blood. And she was like Satan incarnate, right? Or something.
Yeah. She was,
drinking. Was she a reptilian?
They're all reptilian. All the Clintons are reptilians and murderers. And they're all feasting on the stem cells, the bone marrow out of infants.
Wow.
That are being offered them, in ritual sacrifice.
That's a real bummer.
It's still creative, though. And I think
so. There you go. There's your punk rock, dude. It's like a fucking, that's about as punk rock as it gets. How can you get more hardcore and punk rock than QAnon shit like that? Like, maybe it wasn't musical. Maybe it was just like in the concepts of eating baby's blood and marrow. Like, that's punk rock as fuck, dude.
Yeah. Fuck convention.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to fight fucking child trafficking and pizzerias. For the next few years. Well, that, you know, for May 8th, when you guys play, if I get Alex Jones in the studio and we start messing around, the guy's obviously musical. He's got a great, you know, voice.
Oh, yeah.
Man,
The toads are turning gay. The Clintons are trying to murder my children.
We'll figure it out. But if you need an opening act, I think QAnon Core would really enrage a lot of your audience and get them primed for something that they're not.
If you could get Alex Jones to open for us, that'd be sick.
Hey, he's unfortunately.
We actually have an opener, which I should mention, Kalu and.
Oh my God, he's awesome.
Clue's going to open. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on today and talking about Afrobeat and telling us a little bit about Fela and then going all the way into how you'd run your cult in West Texas and giving us a little bit of hope that that will happen sooner than later.
It's in the process. It's happening.
But
we shall all transcend.
Take me with you, leader. But again, thanks so much for coming on. And again, May 8th, Golden Dawn Orchestra will be at Moody Theater. This is the time to take all of your fungi and assorted chemicals and avail yourself to the light that is Topaz and his band.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home on the web at hotpiemedia.com. The Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.